Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Yeah, thanks, MOTAT.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are you, Ellen?
I'm gobsmacked that somebody was singing Smash Mouth at a protest. I think that's just hilarious.
The things we do.
Anyway, what are we going to talk about today?
I'm just trying to think of what lyrics they would have been.
Hey, there.
There is, yeah. There's something about ice caps melting in that song, I'm pretty sure. Anyway,
okay.
There is some relevance.
Some relevance.
Sure.
Okay, they weren't just, okay.
But first we're talking about scientists breaking the record for the highest temperature superconductor.
Amen. Yeah.
What does that mean?
This is really good. Okay, so we all know that metals, for example, are very good conductors of electricity and heat, things like that.
Yes.
And so we normally transport our electricity from our hydro dams and everything through wires. So these big old transmission wires at very, very high voltages.
Mm-hmm.
And when we do that, we lose around about 6% of the electricity that we generate just through basically heat. Okay,
that's
so
a bummer.
The wires have a resistance. Okay, a resistance to flow, just like a pipe has a resistance to water flowing through it, so wires have resistance to electricity running through it.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't it be great if we could make wires that don't have any resistance?
It would.
And then we wouldn't lose all of that electricity, which 6% of all the electricity sort of generated in the country is a buttload.
Yeah.
It's a buttload of electricity. So for a long time now, people have been really interested in making these things called superconductors. And these are essentially things that can conduct electricity without any resistance. So
wow.
That means that you'd lose nothing. You lose no heat or anything like that. That the electricity just flows through the stuff and keeps flowing and keeps flowing and you never lose any. And if you can make your wires out of superconductors, then you wouldn't
lose.
Off
you go.
Yeah. And also they're very, very useful in, or potentially useful in transport. So we've got these maglev trains that you may or may not have heard of. Shanghai. If you've been to Shanghai Airport, they've got a maglev train there. That's short for magnetic levitation.
Wow. Oh, no, yeah, we definitely don't have that.
And basically, you get a superconductor and you put a magnet on top of it, and the magnet just floats on top of the superconductor.
Cool.
Okay? And that means, again, no friction. And so, you know, this good things. Good things, superconductors.
Good things.
So, way back in 1985, a couple of Germans found the first what they call high-temperature superconductor, and that was at a temperature of liquid nitrogen temperature, so about minus 196 mm-hmm. degrees Celsius. And prior to that, superconductors were only known at really, really, really low temperature, like a few Kelvin, a few, you know, degrees above absolute zero.
Wow.
So, somebody got the Nobel Prize for discovering the first high-temperature superconductor, and ever since then, the holy grail has been room-temperature superconductors. So, at the moment, you've got to cool things down in liquid nitrogen to get them to superconduct. If you get it to room temperature, then you're going to be rich, you're going to win a Nobel Prize, and you're going to save the world a hell of a lot of energy.
Awesome.
So, this week in Nature, there are a bunch of workers who have reported that they have been able to make something that superconducts at minus 23 degrees Celsius. Yo, okay.
We're getting close.
And so these are people from Germany, the States, Poland, and Russia. So a joint scientific endeavor here. And yeah, negative 23 degrees Celsius. Now, that is absolutely brilliant. It's 50 degrees higher than the previous mm-hmm. highest temperature superconductor. The only slight problem with this is that in order to get it to superconduct, they had to compress it to 170 gigapascals, which is a mere million to a million and a half atmospheres. So we're talking not very viable at the moment. But it's a start.
Yeah.
So the stuff that they use is a lanthanum hydrogen compound. And, you know, this is proof of principle stuff.
Right.
So they're
proving the rule or they're making it happen.
Yeah.
But in order to get it to something viable in terms of just everyday life.
Well, there's a lot of work going to go down the track,
between,
obviously.
Okay.
But hell, if you can get something superconducting at minus 23 degrees Celsius, then you know, room temperature is really not that far away. No. And this, you know, this is pretty darned exciting, I would say, which is why it's been published in Nature.
And is it, will they get a Nobel Prize for this? Or is it about getting it viable first?
Do they
try and get it to room temperature first, or do they do the viable, like, get
No, I would imagine they would just cool it down and then just slowly warm it up and just see when it stops superconducting. But,
okay.
You know, this is very, very important stuff, this. It really is. The people who are doing this work, yeah, deserve all the plaudits and everything. So who knows where this may lead. And again,
and also, how long are we talking?
Well, that's the question that you often ask on this program, William.
Well, it's just, you know, it's a reality.
I know, and my
we
answer
need solutions.
Is, yeah, my answer is always, you know, more research is needed, you know. And they had one of the headlines in The Onion or whatever, you know, scientists say no more research needed, you know.
That is so good. That is so good.
But
that is becoming a sting.
You know, it is really, really exciting, really important stuff. And, you know, they'll keep working. And, you know, one day it'll happen.
Yeah.
You know, and that'll really change the world. Mm. Be brilliant.
Okay.
Yep.
Second topic, which to me is also sounds like good news, using gold to turn CO2 into liquid fuel.
Yes, indeed. Now, this is
something
very
we
important.
Really need.
Oh, no, this is very important research as well. Okay, so everybody knows the problem with CO2. Okay, so it's a greenhouse gas, so it stops all of the infrared being emitted back out to space, warms up the Earth, etc., etc., etc. Not a good thing. Can we get rid of it? And this is a question a lot of people have asked. And, you know, there's lots of ways that have been proposed that we could, you know, get rid of this. We could, you know, pump it into the oceans, or we could sort of bury it in mines and things like that. All sorts of weird things.
Well, that just seems like putting a problem
aside
for later.
Yes. So, ideally, what would be really good is if we could actually turn CO2 into something useful.
Yes.
Which is not easy, because CO2 is what we would call a thermodynamic sink. It's where carbon wants to be. You give any atom of carbon on planet Earth the choice, and it will desperately want to be CO2.
Okay.
And it'll do everything it can to get there. So that means getting out, turning CO2 into something else, is going to be a high energy process. So these folk at the University of Illinois have reported the fact that they can now use gold nanoparticles to turn CO2 into liquid fuels, as you say, or gaseous fuels, so methane, ethane, propane, these very, very short chain hydrocarbons, which when you burn them can generate energy, turn into CO2, and then you take the CO2 back to this, etc., etc., etc.
Right.
Okay, so you're kind of getting money for nothing here.
Yeah.
And the beauty of this process is you don't have to put any energy into it. It's driven by visible light.
Wow.
Okay, so they're basically using these gold nanoparticles. And nanoparticles have dimensions of nanometers, so 10 to the minus 9 meters. So they're sort of clusters of, maybe a couple of hundred gold atoms, something like that. Really, 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 really small.
Okay.
And they have weird features. When you make solids small, they start doing very, very strange things when they get down onto this nanoscale. And gold is no exception here. It forms these nanoparticles, which can exhibit all different colours and everything. They're really cool depending on their size.
Mm.
And so these guys have found that basically you can pump in CO2 and H2O, which are the ingredients for photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of making sugars like photosynthesis does, this is going to make liquid fuels, which, you know, that's kind of nice.
That's amazing.
That's kind of nice. And again, as I say, when you burn the liquid fuels, it just turns it back into CO2 again, and then you can regenerate liquid fuels just by taking the waste CO2 and pumping it around and around and around. So
renewable energy, you know, this is recyclable energy.
Yeah, you know.
Gold,
yep.
We're talking, won't people then be, you know, increasing the attempts to, like, mine for gold to use this for this process? Won't that be another problem? Or are we talking very, very small amounts of gold?
Well, we're talking nanoparticles, certainly. We're probably talking a decent whack of gold, but it's not going to be used up or anything like that.
Right.
So it's a pure catalyst in this case.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
So, again, more work is needed. But, you know, these guys can be pretty pleased with themselves. I think this is really, really nice stuff.
But a step in the right direction, right? We just keep going.
Well, that's what it all is. It's all baby steps.
Yeah.
It is. So, yeah.
Okay. Now, last story.
Now, don't give away the number here.
Okay. Well, I've just... what I've written is that the Chemical Abstract Service has registered another unique substance.
There we go. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So, what was his name? Linnaeus. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of Linnaeus?
No.
Okay. So, he was a Swedish guy, and he sort of... did the whole kingdom, phylum, genus, species, all that sort of stuff. So he catalogued nature, basically.
Okay.
And he sort of gave it some order. And we need that in chemistry as well, because chemistry is just, you know, a whole lot, a truckload of different compounds.
Right.
How do we order those? How do we keep a track of them? How do we know how many compounds there are on the planet? And so a company called the Chemical Abstract Service was set up in around about the 60s, I think the early 60s, basically to do just that, to keep track of every chemical compound on planet Earth. Every last one, okay? So these are natural compounds and these are synthetic compounds, you know, basically anything.
Big job.
And what they do is that they give each distinct chemical compound a number. And so, for example, water is 7732-18-5.
Oh, whoa.
Salt is 7647-14-5. And I don't know why I looked this up, but heroin is 561-27-3.
Okay. So literally everything has a number.
Everything has a number. And this very week or last week, they have just registered their 150 millionth chemical compound.
Wow.
Which...
it's huge.
Well, when you consider that it took them 44 years to get their 50 millionth compound,
yeah.
And that was in 2009, that was 10 years ago.
Okay.
So in the intervening 10 years, we have made 100 million
more
new compounds.
We've made more, or yes. We've just given them a number?
No, we have made.
Whoa.
Okay. So we are talking, get this, 25,000 new chemical compounds a week.
Far out.
I think that's utterly extraordinary. People ask us what chemists do. That's what chemists do.
That's
incredible.
That is incredible.
Absolutely remarkable. So that's a big milestone there. 150 million compounds in the Chemical Abstract Service.
What's an example of somebody making a compound?
Me.
You just go and
do
an experiment.
And you make new things.
Something.
And you think, shit, this has never existed on Earth before. That is so cool. It is such an amazing feeling.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Have you done it?
Yes.
Oh, hell awesome. Yeah. And then do you bring up the Chemical Abstract Service? Like, hey.
No. The way that it's normally done is that you publish it.
Okay.
And then they go through every single paper that has been published, and they pull out all of the unique compounds in that and give them numbers and stuff.
Boy,
it's a tough job. So they're funded by the American Chemical Society.
Okay.
So they're part of that. And in order to get... And this is the world's biggest index, basically.
Yeah, right.
By far and away. And in order to get access to this index, you do have to pay, obviously. And so you get institutional subscriptions, you know, the universities and stuff like that. It's not cheap.
No.
As you can well imagine, because it's a big bloody job.
Thank you for that, Alan. We are going to wrap it up here, but somebody texted in about the highest temperature superconductor story. They said -23 degrees? That is room temperature in some student flats. I would agree.
Would that
thank
be
you, texter.
An extra need night, possibly?
Yeah,
I'd say
possibly. All right. Well, thank you very much, Alan. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, we'll do. See ya.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.